Hi, Michelle, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Rebecca. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
Are we despondent about what we have to talk about today?
I really am. I was really surprised at watching the press conference yesterday, how sad I felt for him.
Me too. Let's do an intro and explain who we are and then say who, although it's obvious who we're talking about, but you want to go first?
Sure. I'm Michelle Goldberg. I'm a senior writer at Newsweek and The Daily Beast and the author of a couple of books, including most recently The Means of Reproduction.
And I am Rebecca Traister, and I am a contributor to Salon and soon to be a contributor to The New York Times Magazine. And I am the author of Big Girls Don't Cry, The Election That Changed Everything for American Women, which is totally coincidentally out in paperback today.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And we are here talking about Anthony Weiner.
That's right. And, you know, I should say I'm not a huge fan of Anthony Weiner. I like the fact that he's outspoken on a lot of progressive issues. He's shockingly bad on something I care a lot about, which is Israel and Palestine. You know,
yeah.
I would have liked to have to see him call a press conference and give a public apology for saying that there's no Israeli occupation of the West Bank, or for his, kind of terrible, lurid flirtations with the Zionist Organization of America.
Let me ask you a question, though, because I have a sort of arc of changed feeling about him, too, that has to do with Israel. Those are old positions, though, right? I mean, don't you think he's mellowed on that a little bit, or no?
I think he might have mellowed. Yeah, he seems to have mellowed since he married
Huma Abedin.
Right. But
yes.
He certainly, no, I mean, it was actually very recently, I believe, that he said that there was no occupation of the West Bank. I think maybe he's been, less public about his embrace of the Zionist Organization of America. For those who don't follow, kind of Jewish communal politics, the Zionist Organization of America is well to the right of AIPAC, which is well to the right of where most American Jews are. So he might have become kind of less outspoken, but I don't think he has moderated his positions, certainly not his votes.
Well, that's the thing for me. I spent years actually actively disliking Anthony Weiner as my local politician who I, a lot of people I think hadn't heard of him, but because I live in Brooklyn, he was somebody who I quite often had interviewed. I'd seen at rallies, I'd seen him give speeches, I'd paid a lot of attention to his career, and I actively disliked him for years and years. I actually just thought he was a Zionist with whom I disagreed on a lot of things having to do with Israel. That was actually the major thing that I didn't like about him. And I had been really surprised, and I have to say that I kind of wrote him off for a lot of years, a lot of the years that he's been representing parts of Queens and Brooklyn. And then in recent years, I remember disliking him so much that when I was covering, for instance, in the 2008 campaign, a presidential campaign, and I would see him at Hillary Clinton rallies because he was there with his wife-to-be, Huma Abedin, who is Hillary Clinton's body person, is what they call it, her sort of second, her assistant, but far more than her assistant, the person who accompanies her everywhere, who is fundamentally responsible for organizing her life, for representing her in some way, and was in that role also through the campaign, I would see Weiner and I would sort of roll my eyes. And then he's somebody I had so changed my mind about in recent years. I couldn't believe it. I posted Facebook clips of him, not only that impassioned speech that he gave on behalf of Ground Zero workers in which he asked Republicans who were voting no to come, he said, just vote no, don't hide behind, this fake rhetoric, which is what we are seeing, I think, most often in the coverage of who he had been in Congress. He gave a terrific response that I'm sure you saw and that maybe even we talked about to Republicans trying to defund Planned Parenthood, to attacks on reproductive rights.
Yeah, that was the last time I saw him give it. The last time I saw him in person was at a big rally at 100 Center Street.
Yes, I was. That's where I was there too.
Right. It was so sad. The last thing I have in my mind is him shouting, you know, my name is Anthony Weiner and I stand for women, which has such a different kind of cadence now. Or to such a different valence. Like,
it just, this is what he, the last thing I have, I was there too and I do remember that, but I remember the speech that he gave on the floor where he actually said, and I wish I could remember who he was arguing with, but it was one of his big, you know, production numbers, which are really valuable, as we know, within the political process now that, you know, especially in an age of social media, where we can put these things on Facebook, which also turns out to be his downfall. But, you know, he was doing a big response about Republicans trying to defund Planned Parenthood, but also more specifically about abortion, and he actually said to one of the Republican lawmakers, and I wish I could remember exactly who it was, he said, oh, so you're acknowledging that there is a woman in the room. He was actually talking about something that I hold very dear to my heart, which is the argument that the morality of the woman involved in any choice about her reproduction is something that we fail to talk about when we focus so much on a fetus. And in fact, there are lots of pro-choice lawmakers who use very defensive positions and never get around to saying, wait a minute, what about the woman? What about the morality of the woman? And here was Anthony Weiner doing that to the face of these Republican lawmakers. And then not long after that, there was a much funnier example during the conversation about defunding NPR, where I remember he brought out a picture of Click and Clack, the car talk guys, and sort of said, this is who's doing damage to America, Click and Clack, really? These are the guys we have to defund? And, you know, I'd really become an admirer of this sort of performance aspect of his political career, because I do think it's very important, not to mention, you know, some of the stuff he said about healthcare. He had become, in my mind, perhaps increasingly liberal, but also increasingly willing to be the future of public, visible, articulate, funny, compelling, right, and charismatic liberal argument. But he is too stupid. He's too stupid, as it turns out.
And here's what, there's two things I've been thinking about a lot. I mean, one of them is, you're right that it was, I mean, it's kind of so breathtaking. In a way, the recklessness is even, now, I actually don't think what he did, I don't think he should resign.
Of course not. He should either. But I think he's powerless.
And I actually don't think that this should be as big of a scandal as it is, right? As you know, I wrote this in the Daily Beast this morning. Until now, there's always been, whenever we have one of these big scandals, there's usually this kind of fig leaf of justification for our salacious interest in it.
Right.
You know, usually it's that there was harassment, there was an illegal cover-up, there was the use of public funds, there was, you know, kind of something beyond just the fact that somebody cheated on their spouse or did something kind of creepy. In this case, there really was nothing. I mean, from what we know now, it was entirely consensual. It was, entirely legal. And although, you know, now I guess there are questions being raised about whether or not he instructed this porn star to lie, which could complicate things. But from what we know right now, I guess his biggest sin is that, he lied to the media. Although I'm trying to think, I think most people, if they were suddenly found themselves being asked on national television about their most humiliating vices, would probably kind of come up with some stupid lie and then maybe eventually come clean. And so to me, what he did, I think there's something really disturbing about this precedent, because basically what this says is that there no longer has to be kind of any public import at all. It's basically open season on everyone's private life. And this might have been kind of like especially weird and creepy, but I don't know if it will be the next time. I mean, are we next going to see it become kind of big news if some congressman is caught buying, you know, some weird porno or something? But then the other thing, the other piece of it, which strikes me as like a little bit more valid, is that this demonstrates, you know, spectacularly bad judgment and impulse control, because what he did was actually more reckless than, say, what Elliot Spitzer did. You know, what Elliot Spitzer did was vastly more serious and it was breaking the law, but it was actually, there was at least a possibility that it wouldn't become public, Whereas there's just no way, I mean, any eighth grade girl should know you just cannot tweet naked pictures of yourself without everyone in school seeing it eventually.
Right. Well, let me unpack everything you just said and try to respond to different parts. My one question, and you may know the answer to this, the thing I was confused by, I watched the whole news conference yesterday with my jaw on the floor. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I couldn't believe the tenor. I was impressed, actually, by the tenor of his apology, but then I also think, you know, first of all, I've written about this in the past. Apology is often very much more flattering on men than it is on women, and I sort of have to keep that in mind. Like, when you have a man apologizing abjectly, I think this was also true for Mark Sanford, and everybody was sort of like, wow, what an apology.
Actually, hold on. I need to close the door. I'll be right back. But,
okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry, perils of working at home. Okay.
So that said, I was on some level, you know, I was struck by what I felt was the authenticity of his apology, although I was then troubled by the fact that after this, he said, oh, just this morning he told his wife, which really hammered home to me the fact that it was only that other news organizations were releasing other pictures of him. It wasn't even that he'd sort of thought hard on this for the past week. Mm-hmm. And when he'd been raging against, I mean, one among the things I'm incredibly pissed off about is that the possibility that he, in raging against Andrew Breitbart, but falsely, he has somehow fueled this incredibly deceptive, he's given a point to Breitbart that, and I hate that. I hate it.
Right, yeah, politically it's infuriating that he has, yes, he strengthened Breitbart, and especially because Breitbart has been really deceptive in the past. His credibility was in tatters. It now means that
he has no credibility until now. Anthony Weiner just gave him an enormous amount of credibility.
The next charge he levels, you know, whether it's valid or not, is going to be taken really seriously.
Right. But here's my one question. Maybe you can answer it to me. Is that the thing I had thought, sort of piecing together what had happened, is that the tweet that he'd sent of his underwear, which also, everything about this is so juvenile, that he actually said he had sent it to Jeanette Cordova, this student who has been horribly harassed in Seattle.
Right. I don't think he meant to do it.
He meant to send it to the porn star.
That's what I don't think that was totally clear. That's my assumption. You know,
because the one thing about this is if he did mean to send it to that 21-year-old student and it was unsolicited, that's an issue.
Right.
Then that's an issue. Then that's harassment when you're sending pictures of your penis to a student who's not asking for it. You know, that's an issue. If I'm misunderstood, and that's what was unclear in how he explained it, because he didn't say, he said he was sending it as a joke to the woman who got bothered about it. And I'm very unclear. If indeed it was he intended to send it to her, then that's a serious problem. And it was unsolicited.
I think it was, though. I mean, especially because the second he realized he had sent it, he deleted it.
Right. But the other thing, I completely agree with you that he shouldn't have to resign. He has not done anything illegal. I don't think he's even particularly done anything professionally or politically unethical. I agree with you that I fear the witch hunt process of this. One of the interesting things is that I think in a post-Clinton universe, we had actually, in some ways, we've become a lot more inured to this kind of scandal, you know, the sort of Gary Hart thing for candidates, mm-hmm. I don't think would sink a candidate in the same way. You really have to be John Edwards. You have to go to the level where you're paying the videographer and your wife is ill with cancer with two young children at home. You have to go to that level in order to really be sunk by a political scandal. The problem, and I don't think there's any professional or professionally ethical reason for him to resign. And for that sort of precedent-setting reason, I certainly hope that he does not. My larger complaint about the situation and complaint with him is quite related to the Spitzer complaint, which is, screw you, dude. You were a force for good, and you were so stupid that whether or not you resign, the fact is here was this what had become, I thought, a strong and terrific and very useful voice on all kinds of issues that I care about. And we are, as we both know, very short on good voices on these issues, right? And so here was this guy, young guy, had a terrific future, and had become a reliable person in this regard. Whatever else he's done, I believe he should get to keep his job and let people decide whether or not he should be reelected. But he looks like an idiot. And it was stupid. And it was stupid. And like John, and that's how I feel about Spitzer, too. Spitzer had done extremely important work, all of which then was, you know, he could have gone on to do very important work as the governor of New York. John Edwards was going to ask the country to put our trust in him. You know, on the one hand, I don't care who John Edwards was shipping, but what I do care is that, and I've written about this in my book, I was going to vote for him. I was going to have, he was going to be the candidate who was going to go up against John McCain.
And so he potentially kind of, so what angers me is that you risked the entire country, basically. Because
And what Wiener was doing by being so inanely, moronically stupid about social media, yes, but also just in general stupid, just stupid, was a much smaller version. But if you look at his future potential, we could regard it as he was going to continue a political career that could have been a very valuable one, and it was going to be a risk the whole time that he's so stupid. And my complaint about these guys, why did he get married? I don't care who he was. It's just stupid. It's stupid.
But, you know, I think more than stupid, there's, whenever one of these stories comes up, there's something, it makes me realize that there's just something incredibly mysterious about the world of men. You know, it used to upset me during the Clinton years when this happened, and, you know, when people were kind of upset, and then there was a bunch of voices that were just kind of like, you're so naive, everybody does this, you know, we can't kind of lynch people for being human. I agree with that to a certain extent, but I also, it does make me wonder, is this what all men do? Like, we keep being amazed as one man after another, you know, kind of throws away everything for what seems to us kind of, incredibly stupid and trivial. But maybe this is something that's kind of more ubiquitous than most women know or want to know. I mean, I really don't know. Maybe I'm, you know, fantastically naive to think that, that some men are exceptions.
Well, I'm naive with you. I believe that many men are exceptions. I don't think all men behave this way. But I do think one of the things we have to unpack, and especially when we say, are men doing this versus are women doing this? I mean, among the things that we would need to consider is the association of power and sexuality, right? Mm-hmm. And so we say, you know, men have all these sexual scandals, male politicians, male athletes, male actors, you know, for example, have all these terrible sex scandals. And you look just at the past few, I mean, from Ensign to Schwarzenegger and, I mean, Wiener, it's laughable, it's embarrassing. It's just these men who have tremendous responsibility being so irresponsible. And so careless. And politicians have had, male politicians have had mistresses time immemorial, you know. But they also didn't live in an age where everything was so easily exposed. And I would venture to say, in many cases, were also more careful. But I also think that there's this thing about power, and it seemed to me to be very clear in the Spitzer case, where there was this direct correlation between the thing that Spitzer, you know, had a, and what was he? He was a steamroller, right? Like, Spitzer clearly got off on the idea of his own power. And in fact, the very thing that he exercised power about, you know, a tighter control of the sex industry, was the thing that he could somehow get away with, right? Mm-hmm. And it was the psychology of that, while not simple, at least from the outside, you could make an educated guess about some of the psychology behind what happened with Spitzer, right? And it had to do with this idea of power and being able to get away with stuff, and also the connection of sexuality or virility with power, political power, professional power. And I don't know that we know how women would, if there were more women who had more power, or if we as socially connected female power with a female equivalent of virility. I mean, femininity, but that doesn't quite do it.
I don't think that any woman, or any woman, I don't want to generalize. In general, I think that very few women imagine that the spoils of power, that the reward of their ambition, is going to be access to lots of men. I mean, partly because you just don't need to achieve that much to have sex with lots of men, you know, almost, and it's just, I mean,
but,
just the
dynamics. But there's
the
also the reverse equation for women. But we're also used to a reverse equation where in some ways the more powerful you are, the less sexualized you are by society, right? We're so used to that, that in fact, it's the opposite, and there, of course we know that's not true. We know that, in life, of course, extraordinarily powerful women can also have very active, happy sex lives, have very, perhaps very strong sexual and varied sexual
right,
appetites.
Right, but I don't think, but I don't think that power really, it doesn't help them in that regard. It's not, I mean, I just, it doesn't, you don't see kind of I don't think very many women see achieving power as a kind of stepping stone towards sexual fulfillment. It's just not that helpful in that regard.
Right. No, it's not. In fact, and it is, as I said, I think it's the inverse. There's that story,
right.
I mean, that Maureen Dowd told about one of her friends upon winning the Pulitzer Prize calling and saying, so I'm never going to have a date again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is a sort of, there's a lot of old baggage, however true it is or not, that once you, if you're a woman, once you become powerful, you become immeasurably less attractive to men because you're more threatening. So we can't even imagine what that is. We have seen some women with political sex scandals. I mean, Nikki Haley was accused of having extramarital affairs, and that was covered with a lot
right.
of eagerness.
But that actually seemed like just a very kind of old-fashioned kind of slur, where you basically want to take a woman down, you call her a slut.
Right. And the same kind of things were leveled at Sarah Palin, though none of them really stuck. But there were certainly all kinds of... there were rumors during Palin's vice presidential candidacy about infidelity, none of which I think ever bore out, but people were very eager to sort of start to tar her with that too.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree that this thing, the thing with Wiener, I just, if he wanted to keep sexting with women who he met on Facebook, great. I mean, it's this sort of George Clooney argument, you know? George Clooney, mm-hmm. Clooney can't get in any scandalous trouble because George Clooney has never gotten married, you know? Once you're, it's the thing with Tiger Woods. Why did, you know, just don't get married. Just continue to live your you know, sexting life and don't make a big public sort of celebrity wedding.
I guess, but isn't it at least possible? I mean, I don't want to justify this, and I would never kind of justify it in my own life, you know. But I also just wonder if there's something more complicated than that. If it's possible for a man to be genuinely in love and genuinely also want, you know, a kind of partner and someone to share their life with, but then also feel the need to, you know, first of all, we know that many good and faithful married men use pornography.
Sure.
Right? And so I'm not, so this, you know, these kind of like disembodied internet sex, you know, these disembodied kind of internet flirtations, it seems in a way to be closer, from where I sit, closer to pornography
yes.
than to an affair. You know, you could even make an argument that it's less exploitive than pornography because there, you know, because it doesn't kind of come with all the abusive baggage of that industry.
Right, and at least it's real women, or, you know, social media constructions of real women.
Right, like it wouldn't be okay with me in my own life, but I also, it doesn't seem to me to be necessarily antithetical to a man's desire to be at the same time a kind of good and real husband. I mean, I guess
that's very fair. I mean, I think he didn't. The degree of wrongness here, on a scale of giant wrongness, is very minor. I wouldn't tolerate it in my own marriage. That's definitely true. I would be horrified. I would be totally horrified by it. In fact, but there was apparently no physical contact. It was just sort of, again, it just sort of robs him of authority. It robs him of the kind of sense of being together, mature, in control that we need to have from politicians who we're going to trust. As far as the personal issues within his marriage go, I guess it is too extreme for me to say, come on, why get married? It's just that I really feel for his wife, who's a really, because what something like this does, even if it isn't the world's most giant crime against marriage or fidelity, is it humiliates your partner.
Right.
Who is also a public person in a public job and was a public person in a public job when you married her and who has remained so through the marriage, which only occurred last summer. And, you know, it casts this
whole... Well, especially because I think you'd have to imagine that if you're marrying somebody who's basically Hillary Clinton's closest aide...
Yes.
That at some point you say to them, you better never do anything like that to me.
Well, when he said yesterday in the press conference that he had disclosed to her, and, you know, the timing of it we're just guessing at because, of course, it wasn't fully detailed, but when he said in the press conference yesterday that he had disclosed to her before their marriage that he had had these relationships, I gather during their relationship, but before their marriage was the line mm-hmm. he was drawing. I mean, you would think, again, Bill Clinton married them. He officiated their wedding. She is Hillary Clinton's, I mean, I feel the Clintonian shadow that is cast on this is just, it makes me sad, too, for, it brings back echoes of, you know, lots of stuff. But, you know, you would think that there would be that conversation. You would think, again, he would know. He's a smart man. Or is smart in many regards. He should have known. And from the reports that have leaked out about how this happened, he has indicated that he was smart enough to know, that he chickened out of sending some of these photos. And again, the photos weren't, I mean, all the photos are just sort of like his wax chest, him sitting with his cats. I mean, it seems like there
are worse photos out there. I mean.
Oh, really?
Well, they're pretty clearly, because at the press conference, somebody said, you know, first there was Andrew Breitbart basically saying that he has kind of pornographic photos.
Right.
And when somebody asked Wiener,
I don't trust anything that Andrew Breitbart said.
Oh, I don't
now
either.
And now I'm supposed to believe him, I guess, about
those.
No, this,
I don't trust him about those, but somebody asked Wiener about them and
yes,
asked him if he was willing to say that they don't exist, and he said no, he couldn't say that.
Oh, I mean... You know, the bottom line is, I totally don't think the guy should resign. But I just fear for, let's be fair, let's consider one of the most powerful lawmakers of our time, and certainly on the left was Ted Kennedy, right? So mm-hmm. it is possible for gifted politicians to escape personal scandal and go on to have illustrious careers.
Well, Barney Frank.
Exactly. Barney Frank,
right?
Ted Kennedy.
Yeah, Barney Frank, nobody really thinks about that anymore. It's, you know, it's a footnote. I think that this could easily become a footnote, with time, even though right now it doesn't seem like that.
Right. Well, I'll also say this about the coverage yesterday. Watching as you can tell from what I've said, I'm incredibly pissed off at him. I just think it's such a waste, and I think it's so dumb. And, you know, and I'm... all the sort of goodwill that I'd built up for him in recent years just sort of got erased because I felt like he's careless with this amount of goodwill that he has engendered from people. And it's a terrible waste of political capital. But that said, I will say this about the coverage yesterday. I watched the press conference. As I said, I was, you know, the contriteness, I was like, wow, he really does feel like a schmuck, as he should.
Every bit of anger I had was so kind of overcome with pity. I just thought
I felt bad for him too.
Somebody laid bare like that was so almost harrowing.
Yes, and he struck me. I mean, but again, he struck me as rather pathetic. This is not something, a quality you look for in your, you know,
right.
In your rabble-rousing politicians, is sort of pathos or bathos, you know. But that said, I was stunned. I thought it was pathetic. I thought he had been laid bare. I thought it was really opening a vein, and it was ugly, and I couldn't believe how many questions he took. And it was just, I was astounded by the sort of exposure of it all. But then I was more astounded, and I watched MSNBC afterwards, the network that was supposed to be on his side, not that I'm asking them to have been, but I was really startled. The way that they went after him, I really thought watching the press conference, like, okay, so I'm irritated, you know, disgusted and mad at him. But this isn't going to do big damage. I really, during the press conference, if you told me that people were then going to be calling for his resignation afterwards, during that press conference, I would have been stunned. It made perfect sense to me. No, I'm not resigning. Yes, I'm an idiot. Yes, I'm in big trouble, and my wife might well divorce me, and I'm going to look stupid for a while. But it never occurred to me, actually, that in the hour, 2 hours, 6 hours after that press conference, I was going to be listening to pundits, especially pundits on the left, talking about a resignation. I'm really surprised by the intensity of the reaction to this. I'm really surprised by it.
And I wonder how much of it, because I cannot imagine that all of these people who are calling for him to resign are themselves kind of paragons of sexual virtue. I mean, maybe some of them are.
Chris Matthews had better be. After years of going after Bill Clinton, after years of like going after, Chris Matthews better have never put a toe outside the line in his own marriage, because if he has, man, someday it's going to come back to him.
I mean, and I guess I understand, you know, people kind of saying, I saw something about Ed Schultz kind of saying, take one for the team. You know, this is the kind of scandal that's probably going to keep on giving for a while,
right?
Assuming that there are these transcripts out there, they're going to be, you know, it's going to be kind of a slow drip, drip, drip.
Again, stupid, you know, stupid, stupid Anthony Weiner. Stupid, stupid. Why do you give them this? Why do you give people this? This is what is so maddening about it. He, like, gift-wrapped something, not only for Andrew Breitbart, but for the right. I did think, by the way, it was, I actually am somebody, even though I thought it's crazy that they're talking about a resignation and everything, I thought Pelosi's move of, you know, the ethics investigation was smart because she headed off critics at the pass. I mean, that stuff I completely get. And,
right, and if there are questions, yeah, I mean, you should kind of make sure that there was no legal breaches.
Right, right. But I am amazed by the level of, considering that apparently he did not actually have a physical affair, and, you know, that as far as we know, no one was underage, and that there was no payment, and that everything was, I am stunned, especially since I did think we had become inured to it. I just think this was, you know, I can't believe that what I thought was, you know, a promising politician, you know, makes an ass of himself, has become the end of Anthony Weiner's career. So,
you know, and
which
sometimes
is,
I wonder, and I also just wonder, I wonder how much of the sanctimony is people kind of imagining that Americans are much more puritanical than they are. You know, I mean, the same kind of thing happened with Clinton.
Yes.
Right? One of the reasons that you know, people just, there was an assumption that his career would never survive, that Americans would never forgive this. You know, I don't think that these pundits' moral sensibilities, most of them, have truly been injured as much as they see themselves.
No,
as kind of
that's one of the things I was stunned by yesterday watching the response on MSNBC, is a bunch of these guys were up there talking about how weird and sick it was, and I was like, what? I mean, again, I am disgusted. I am, and on a personal level, I would be horrified if this were, you know, on a purely personal level. Unacceptable behavior within a marriage, as far as I personally, Rebecca, am concerned, okay? But, like, there's nothing weird or, I mean, it's stupid, it's juvenile, it's eighth grade-ish, but there's nothing sick or bizarre or unheard of. Chris Matthews yesterday was like, I guess you young people understand this sexting, as if, I mean, come on, it's just another form of infidelity. You know, and in this case, a non-physical form,
really. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, I mean, I'm sure that even Chris Matthews knows what phone sex is. You know, if we found out that, say, Anthony Weiner had been calling one of those 900 numbers that used to advertise on television late at night,
right?
Would we similarly believe that he, you know, kind of needed to be held up for a mass public shaming?
Right.
I'm not sure. I mean, what if somebody had taped him? I don't want to even go there, but, it doesn't seem to me to be as kind of unutterably, I mean, yeah, it seems to me to be kind of incredibly stupid politically, but it doesn't strike me as kind of
the greatest moral failing of our time.
And, well, just, it also just, or even as being really all that kinky.
It's not kinky. It was just unfaithful. Like, that's the thing. It was just unfaithful, but not even physically unfaithful. Mm-hmm. It was something that a partner would have every right to be furious about and, you know, and do whatever then made sense for that partner. And B, that makes him look like an asshole and discredits him professionally. Not because of any hypocrisy about stated issues about sexuality like many on the right have, but just because it's careless, it's stupid, he had no thought to consequences, and it showed extremely poor judgment, and it makes him look like an idiot who shaves his chest and sends pictures to women of his shaved chest and his penis in his underwear. I mean, that just, it just takes away from, like, the moral outrage that he'd gotten so good at. You know, it doesn't morally, rationally, or ethically conflict with that. It just makes him look like a doofus. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's going to be harder to take him seriously when he gets up and makes really profound, articulate, passionate statements on the floor, as he's been doing. But ultimately, there is nothing kinky about it, except, you know, there's nothing kinky about it. It was garden variety, vanilla, in unfaithful, you know, flirtation.
It also makes me think that there has to be some kind of way to deal with this going forward, because, you know, whether we like it or not, there does seem to be people who kind of have these incredibly hard-charging personalities. I mean, again and again, we see, and I don't know if maybe this is every person, maybe it's just kind of people in politics or people in these, you know, kind of high profile positions that attract a lot of type A kind of narcissists. But people do seem to need some kind of release, you know, they seem to, you know, whether it be, you know, kind of infidelity or drugs or something. You know, some people say, well, how can we, if somebody is so kind of irresponsible in their private life, how can we trust them to be responsible in their public life? There might be something to that, but there also might be that kind of people who are very responsible in their public life
need some sort of outlet. Maybe, but I'm not prepared to, I mean, yeah, sure, some individuals, but it really depends on what that, you know, how that, what form that outlet takes. I mean, again, I don't think it was the crime here that's so bad. I think it was the stupidity of it. And the, you know, and so even if there was, and I do think there's a chance. By the way, I actually don't think he'll resign. Maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe I obviously...
I don't think he will, and I hope he doesn't. I mean, unless something else comes out that shows that he either did pressure people not to speak out, or if he, yeah, know, he did something, but yeah, I mean,
unless there's something we don't know about, I think it's very possible he's going to survive in his career, whether, and it's just, you know, he's lost his capital, but I actually do think we are making room for this in the case of some people. Like, look at, for example, the issue of whether or not Bill Clinton, I mean, this is the drug use thing, the issue of whether or not Bill Clinton smoked dope in college was, you know, one of the lasting questions. You know, I didn't inhale, he felt compelled to lie, you know, to mm-hmm. say I didn't inhale. And then we got through George Bush, who there were rumors about his drug use, and nobody seemed to really care that much. And then we have Barack Obama, who wrote about his own youthful drug use, and we don't care anymore. I do think we're building up
We care if he did it now.
Yeah, we definitely would care if he did it now. And that's true. But I do think there's a degree. Again, I don't think the Gary Hart thing would stop.
Right.
Maybe it would. I don't think a Gary Hart scandal would stop a candidate the way it stopped Gary Hart anymore. But maybe I'm wrong. I think John Edwards was the sort of explosive exception to that rule, because he really hit every possible disgusting nail on the head. And
right.
And that, in fact, post-Edwards, we're further inured to sex scandal in our politics.
And there's obviously a double standard, right? Like, I could imagine somebody, some right winger watching this, you know, with kind of mounting outrage that we're willing to make all these allowances for somebody like Wiener that we wouldn't make for, you know, a right winger who did something similar.
Well, obvious. Yes.
Yeah, right. Because they're actually, I think, you know, so as long as there's no, because I actually, you know, hypocrisy does matter, you know, if you are kind of, you know, making the point of your public life to, you know, to kind of demagogue about the sanctity of marriage in the service of denying it to other people, or to, you know, kind of police the sex lives of other people, or, you know, to present yourself as a paragon of family values.
Right.
Then this kind of stuff does matter. Then you open yourself up to it. But yeah, I think if there's no hypocrisy, if there's no illegality, and there's no coercion, you know, I wrote about this in the aftermath of the DSK thing, where, you know, for a long time people here, you know, or at least on the left, have admired the French mm-hmm. for their kind of laissez-faire attitude towards sexuality. Then we saw the real dark side of that in the,
right.
you know, where that basically became. It wasn't so much kind of laissez-faire tolerance as much as, you know, a willingness to wink at incredible abuses of power.
Right.
But there has to be some sort of middle ground between that and the situation we have now where, you know, we're basically, as we live more of our lives in public, you know, kind of everybody's going to be subjected to this slavering, sanctimonious panopticon.
Right.
Like, it's...
Well, I think the thing is we have to see what happens. Again, I think there's a very good chance he's going to keep his career, his job. I certainly hope he doesn't resign. Whether or not he ever gets reelected, whether or not he... And we haven't talked about the fact that what everybody assumed Anthony Weiner's future was going to be is as the mayor of New York, which, by the way, I also think is very possible. And one of the... You know, we've had mayors with, you know... with sort of, if not scandalous, then at least, you know, New York has a high tolerance for colorful varieties of mayors.
Right, I mean, nobody cared that Ed Koch was gay.
Right, and so, you know, and in fact, one of the dream mayoral candidates that has, you know, been mentioned many times since he left the White House was Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton would be a great New York mayor, you know, sort of.
Right, and we'd get elected in a heartbeat.
Yes, in a second, and it would be a job he would love to. I still think he should do it. But you know, Weiner could, I don't think this has killed his mayoral chances either. But that'll be, he needs to take some time to rehabilitate. So, in fact, I hope that you're right, that there is no, that we are developing a way to deal with this and not having people lose their jobs in some automatically, but I am still mourning, nonetheless, even though I hope he keeps his job, I am mourning the larger impact of his career. I am sad because, while I hope he keeps his job, he's never going to be the guy that I had begun to hope he was going to be. Or at least it's very unlikely that he's going to be that guy again. And so for me, that's what I'm disappointed about and angry about.
So should we end it there?
I think we should.
Okay, well, thank you so much. It was fun talking to you about this.
Thank you. Go enjoy a beautiful day.
Yeah, you too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.